Thank you. It's great to be with you here tonight. Thank you all for coming out. I'm sorry I wasn't able to join you for worship, but I trust that's been good. This is a wonderful time of year for us in the church to dive into some deeper things, some meatier things, and I think this kind of works well to talk about oikocredit. At the same time, as I'm sure you've been talking about since last Sunday, since the beginning of Lent, the Lent is a time when we think about some of the darker, more difficult, more painful places and things in the world and in our own lives. And oikocredit is a way of responding to some of that darkness in a way that I think is really fast forwards us into Easter. And so it's great to be with you here today. Jesus said that the kingdom of God is as if someone would scatter seed on the ground and would sleep and rise night and day, and the seed would sprout and grow. He does not know how. It's a marvel for a seed planted in the ground and how it grows and becomes a rich harvest. It's like a mustard seed, he said, which when sown upon the ground is the smallest of all the seeds in the world. Yet when it is sown, grows and becomes the greatest of all shrubs and puts forth large branches so that the birds of the air can make nests in its shade. Jesus told stories and he taught in parables. And today I'd like to build on that particular parable, the parable of the mustard seed, and share the story of oikocredit. It's an organization that I volunteer with, which you are actually all involved with too, whether you knew it or not, through the United Church of Canada. It's called oikocredit, and it's one of the great mustard seed stories that I've ever come across. Oikocredit is one of the largest microfinance organizations in the world, and it makes loans that are provided to the world's poor so they can build up their lives and lift themselves out of poverty. Now, a couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to travel. I said a couple of months. It's actually a couple of years ago that I got a chance to travel to Bulgaria, and a part of the world I never expected to be in, but there was the opportunity. And I got to visit some of the people who have received microloans and fair financing from oikocredit. One of the highlights of my trip was meeting these folks, Socha and Ivan Mitev. They're on either side. They're the older couple. The Mitevs are Roma people, also known as gypsies. And they're a family of farmers, and they're full of gratitude and pride about what they have accomplished in the last 10 years since they started receiving loans from Dovery, which is the microfinance cooperative supported by oikocredit. So 10 years ago, they were farming just 2 hectares of land, and now they are farming over 250 hectares and employing over 200 people from the surrounding villages. They've become a source of employment and hope and growth for their surrounding community. Their lives and the lives of millions of people have been profoundly improved by access to relatively small loans to buy tools and machinery, seed, and to rent more land from the surrounding area. Now, the Mitev family is just one of the many clients of the Dovery Credit Cooperative. And Dovery is a word I learned means trust. Started by providing loans to small farmers and has now expanded into a full microfinance institution. Oikocredit provides loans to groups like Dovery that fits certain criteria? Does it benefit disadvantaged people? What is the ecological impact? Will people be able to pay back the loan? That's an important part of it too. Is there actually need for our involvement? That is it not really available anywhere else? Another visit we had was to, I'm going to ask you to move ahead to the next slide there. That's the whole extended, more of the extended family of the Mitev family. And actually, I'm a little behind, so we'll keep moving here a little bit. 250 hectares. We got to visit these folks out in the field. Go ahead. You can go to the next one. And if you can imagine, if any of you, does anybody come from a farming background? So you know that 2 hectares is actually not a lot of land to try and make a living from, right? So they were really subsistence farmers. But now 250 is enough to really bring a little bit of prosperity to their family and to really benefit many more people. Okay, let's keep going, Eric. And those are the members. Now, have you ever hugged your banker? Well, these folks, I'll tell you, when we arrived onto their farm and in their family, they were full of hugs and warmth. These are the staff of the Dovery Credit Cooperative. Okay, let's keep going. So as I already said, those are some of the criteria for how Oiko Credit loans money to organizations like this credit cooperative. Now, the next place I want to introduce you to, another visit that we had, was to a larger agricultural cooperative. And in this case, the farmers in the area formed a cooperative to farm their land as one large farm. So they took these tiny little parcels of land and put them all together in one huge industrial farm as a cooperative to be run democratically. They received both rent for their land and a divided share, a dividend share, of the co-op's profit each year. And the co-op does so much for the surrounding communities. They use farm machinery to clear the roads in the winter. They have harsh winters, and so that's really helpful. They deliver firewood to a lot of the elderly people that are throughout the countryside, and they deliver bread also to folks that need it. It's the cooperative that also provides health care in the region. They provide for a checkup with a doctor every single year, not just for the members of the cooperative, but for everyone in the entire community. So everyone in the village benefits. Here's an old Russian tractor that's still running. That's the kind of equipment that they've been trying to use for many years until Oiko Credit got involved. And you can see on the next slide what they've been able to purchase with loans that come from Oiko Credit. Also, the EU has been involved. So they put together money from a few different sources to buy. Now, my mistake with this picture is I didn't have someone standing, but that back tire is at least as tall as I am. So that's big, big machinery there. Now, another visit that we have was to a dairy farm that's owned by a veterinarian and a former banker. Now, I started to try and describe it, and I decided it sounded kind of like a joke, doesn't it? A vet and a banker and a cow walk into the barn, and guess what happened? It was amazing. Now, both of their grandfathers, of these two guys, were farmers in the same community before the socialist era. As we probably know, Bulgaria was a socialist country until the fall of communism. And 2 generations later, these two guys decided to buy up this old, ruined collective dairy farm in their own hometown. Now, they bought the old, dilapidated farm, and they started to rebuild it. Let's go to the next slide, Eric. Now, Dobromir had some history. He was the vet that worked in that old collective dairy farm, and he never liked the way that the animals were treated. And so this was an opportunity for him to do things the way he thought they should be done with his new friend, the banker. They bought this old dilapidated farm and they started to rebuild it, but the banks wouldn't give them any loans because agriculture, as always, is considered too risky, especially in countries like this. But when they got in touch with Oiko Credit, which not only approved the loan, it also provided some vital help and advice with business planning. And this is part of the model that Oiko Credit uses, is that it comes in and it doesn't just provide a loan, it provides a lot of help with business planning. So now they have 10 permanent workers who are constantly rebuilding the old dairy farm, doing everything in-house, including the metal fabrication. So you can see this is what the still ruined part of the farm looks like. And if we go to the next one, that's one right beside it that's been completely redone. And there's 10 people just rebuilding the farm all full time. That's part of what's going on in this place. Besides that, after the first couple of loans, and that's part of the model, is that, you know, you start with a small loan and you pay that back and you get larger loans. It's business, right? And they keep carrying on. And so now they've got quite an operation going. Like the agricultural co-op, they do a lot of stuff for the community. They clear the snow in the surrounding area in the winter. They also built a bakery that bakes 700 loaves of bread every single week for the landowners in the area, the workers, and people in the village. And they deliver, again, that bread and that firework to people throughout the community. This is another part of what they've done. They've taken this old, this kind of like barracks for the workers in the past, and they're refurbishing them for families and seniors in the community. There's Dobermir talking about, it's interesting how they combined, there's modern technology, of course, but they're still keeping it pretty labor intensive because they're anxious to keep employing people more than just making it all automated the way, you know, for example, our dairy farms might be here in Canada. Okay, next one. So, now that I've told you some about some of the folks that I visited in Bulgaria, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about what microfinance is about. It's providing small loans to poor entrepreneurs and other groups to help people work their way out of poverty. But do you know who founded the concept? Who invented it? Any ideas? Well, a form of microcredit was initiated by the World Council of Churches back in the late 1960s. It came from the churches. People were still reeling over the horrific, the assassination of Martin Luther King. There was the waste of life and money in the Vietnam War. There was the apartheid policy in South Africa, and they were calling for boycotts of businesses, and especially the banks that were supporting those businesses in South Africa. And people realized there's a disconnect here between the mission and justice work that we're about as the church, but where all of our money is. All of our money as a church is still sitting in banks that are funding some of these injustices that we are against. There's a disconnect there. And so they started to ask the question, what can we do differently? So they decided to form their own kind of bank. They started a new movement from the churches, and to use investments to provide assistance to poor people by way of affordable loans. And this is when three miracles happened. We'll go to the next slide, Eric. Oh yes, that was the original name, was the Ecumenical Development Cooperative Society. And it started in 1976, and the new name in 2000 became Oiko Credit. So three miracles happened when Oiko Credit started. First of all, when they heard the story, some church treasurers said, yes, we will support this. We will put our money, reserve funds from churches, and put that into this new kind of bank called Oikocredit, or in those days, the Ecumenical Development Society. That was the birth of Oikocredit, which started the first microloan programs in Central and South America. And that's where it started. It was in Latin America, and that's still where Oikocredit is largest. The second miracle happened a few years later when ordinary church members also said, we also want to participate. We want to invest some of our savings. So member groups, or support associations, we call them, were formed in many countries in Europe and later in Canada and the U.S. so that individuals as well as churches could invest in the poor. The third miracle was that poor folks who were receiving these loans paid them back. And if any of you have ever been involved in the banking business, a 98% repayment rate is nearly unheard of. We would be the envy of any commercial bank, but that continues to be our repayment rate from folks. People are motivated when they first receive a loan to pay it back so they can keep expanding their business and their work. Let's carry on to the next one. Now, the reality today is, if we ask the question, you know, is this still needed? Well, only 4% of the world's demand for microfinance is still being met, even though most of us have heard of microfinance or microcredit in one form or another. There are still billions of people who don't have access to fair finance, to loans, to credit, to help them prosper, to help them grow. We've figured out that investments of $1,000 now create about 5 new jobs each year. So that's how far one investment of $1,000 goes. Now, the United Church of Canada has around $800,000 invested in Oikocredit, and that they were one of the earliest investors going back to the 70s and early 80s. But over 75% of Oikocredit investments come from individuals. That's still the bread and butter of what Oikocredit does. It's folks like you and me putting in anywhere from $250 to $10,000 or dollars or more into Oikocredit. In the U.S., people have invested about $30 million, and in Canada, it's about $6.5 million that we've invested in Oikocredit. Oikocredit is one of the largest sources of private funding in the microfinance sector, and it has consistently, since the beginning, almost 40 years ago, paid a 2% return on investment each year. It's cashable at any time, so it's a very safe, steady way to save money. And in the meantime, do justice and help the world's poor. No one has ever lost a cent from their investment in Oikocredit. And it's really a unique organization that spans the whole world. Let's carry on to the next couple of slides. That's kind of the mechanics of how it works. We here in Canada would be on the left side of that chart. Our money goes through Oikocredit Canada West. That's the group that I'm part of here in Western Canada, goes to Oikocredit International. The headquarters is in the Netherlands. That's an interesting part of the story, actually. When they first tried to start Oikocredit in the 1970s, they first went to Switzerland to try and set up this bank as the headquarters. But the Swiss said, you can't lend money to those poor people. That's not going to work. They wouldn't let them start it up, so they had to go to the Netherlands to start it. Anyway, through Oikocredit International, the money gets distributed to our partners like the agricultural cooperative I talked about, like the microfinance cooperative I talked about, and businesses like the dairy farm that I talked about as well. And then that money gets paid back. So you get to the bottom and that money comes back to us as investors through that. So the money very often just keeps going around and around and gets loaned again and again to many people. Oiko Credit provides financing in project partners of over 70 different countries. Let's carry on to the next one. I think I already talked about, let's go to that one. Actually, we're almost up to 80 countries now. And we're funding, I'm getting my numbers mixed up. We operate in about 80 different countries, but 70 of them are the ones where the funding goes, and there are about 10 countries where we collect investments and send them overseas. There's a network of international staff in Bulgaria. There was a staff of 8 or 10 people who spread out throughout the whole country and supported the work of Oiko Credit in that country. There are regional offices in some places where there isn't enough work in one country. But over 78,000 people are directly employed by by social enterprises, including cooperatives. And many of those are permanent jobs. Let's carry on to the next. I wanted to show you a few other places just to give, because I mostly talked about my trip to Bulgaria. But of course, we're in Africa and in Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast. This is one example, a women's co-op that has created just a massive market where women can come and sell mostly produce. And it's created a safe, clean place for people to do business. And the next one is in India as an example. Provides opportunities for underprivileged women to, and if you're hearing a theme there, about 3/4 of our loans go particularly to women, because we've discovered in microloans as well as in development work in general, when we work especially with women in communities, we know that that really benefits the entire community, not only their own families. And the next example is in Uruguay, where they have a wool cooperative producing wool garments. And those are just 3 of dozens of examples of our project partners in many different countries, over 70 different countries. I'll just cycle through a few more screens here. There's over $100 million in total capital in loans. Over $1,100 million, I should say, right now. Almost 850 project partners. 28 million people are reached via our microfinance partners. So that's our calculation of the number of people who are impacted by our loans. With a focus on female clients especially, but on rural clients as well. Okay, next one. And just to give you an idea, we're still in Latin America in a large way, but the percentage for Africa is continuously growing. And the work in Central and Eastern Europe really started with the fall of socialism, and that's been a really helpful part of their rebuilding in those countries. Okay, next. Just wanted to say a quick word about social performance. In Oiko Credit, we talk about financial return, but we're especially excited, the thing we're most excited about is the social return on our investments. And so we use a number of different methods to record, to calculate the benefit, the performance of our investments. And so there's a scorecard we use to measure environmental, social, and governance issues. We work at quantifying the people's progress out of poverty, and we look at a whole bunch of social performance indicators. And the next slide will just show you some of the criteria that we use, some of the data that we collect from our partners to keep on top of just how much of a benefit is this to people, because that is what we're in the work to do That's our primary concern. Okay, next. The kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. From an idea and a few churches who are willing to invest their money, OicoCredit has grown into one of the largest suppliers of microloans in the world, which has impacted millions of people. Now, as you heard, I worked as a professional financial advisor for a few years when I needed a break from congregational ministry. That was an interesting experience, but it taught me that finding ethical, truly ethical investments is not an easy thing to do. But in OicoCredit, I can say without hesitation, I know of no more ethical investment than OicoCredit. When people of God are willing to work together and follow God's call, God can do amazing things with us. Through all the changes and the challenges that we face in the church, in our own lives, in our society, let's remember the parable of the seeds. The smallest of seeds can grow and to provide a rich harvest indeed. And we are invited through OicoCredit and lots of other ways that I know you're already involved in to be one of those seeds that produces a wondrous harvest. So that's all I wanted to say to you today, but I would love to hear any questions you might have or just to engage in some dialogue with you. Well, oiko is actually a Greek word. They were, you know, they're church folks that started this thing. And so it means community, it means home. So it has that kind of, it has a rich meaning. It's kind of like shalom in a way, you know, that's got kind of a rich meaning. But that's oiko means home and shelter and community. Yeah. Yes?
I just wondered who in the group decides what's considered ethical.
Well, that's something that gets discussed in lots of ways. The criteria that I quoted, you know, one of the standards now in all of sort of ethical investing, and that which is a kind of a growing field where people are studying it, are environmental impact, social impact, and governance, which is about how is the group organized. It's not just what are the ends they reach, but how do they get there? So the organization itself. So those are the three sort of major criteria that we use to kind of measure. But we're also, another thing that we try and measure all the time is what, you know, how are people progressing out of poverty? Is this really helping them emerge from subsistence and poverty and malnutrition into self-support and that kind of thing?
Do they have to employ a certain number of people? Like you were saying that they try to do that. Is that part of the requirement?
Yeah, it's really it's a very personal way of doing business when you come right down to each individual person. Now, OicoCredit doesn't deal directly with individuals. We deal with partners, like a lot of cooperatives, a lot of different organizations. But they, in turn, take the loans that come from OicoCredit, and they might loan $100 to somebody to buy a better sewing machine so that she can develop a business of making clothes. It might, you know, it often starts with very, very small amounts, but then as that works well, they might get a loan for $500 or $1,000 as they're able to. You know, they always do a business plan. They work with them to, and sometimes if things happen in the country, the currency fluctuates, something happens, they'll reschedule it. They'll work with them, but the idea is to make it sustainable for each group, each person that gets loans.
If either a church or an individual decides to donate, I just want to clarify, it's an investment. It's not a tax-deductible
That's
donation.
Right. Yeah. It's not a donation. It's an actual investment. And so you have, you know, I have an investment with Hoico Credit. I get a report every year. You get a tax notice. It's actual, you get 2% income every year. It's not huge, but it never loses money like my mutual funds have done. you know, as a former financial planner, I wouldn't say put all of your money into Hoico Credit, much as the Hoico Credit part of me would love that, but that wouldn't be financially wise. But to take a part of your savings that is long-term, that you want to keep safe and do some really good with it, it's ideal for, you know, we have Rotary Clubs, service organizations, other nonprofit groups that put their reserve funds with Hoico Credit, because that money is really just sitting there in the bank for the most part, not getting very much. Well, you can put it in Hoico Credit and still get your little bit of interest, but in the meantime, it's doing so much good. And so churches love it, actually, when they really understand what it can do. Yeah.
How do they even find out about Oiko, and how do they apply for it?
Yeah, well, you'd be amazed at how quickly word spreads when farmers, for example, start getting credit. So in some countries, or, well, in any country where we've worked, you know, it starts with, like for example, the very first microfinance organization, well, that was a cooperative that was started by those farmers. And they start looking for where can we get loans, and well, we can't get it from the banks. They find out about Hoico Credit. There's some outreach that's done in those countries in some cases, but it's really kind of a we're looking for you and they're looking for us, and it's a coming together. People talk to each other and someone introduces something. It really depends, of course, where you are. In many Latin American countries, Hoico Credit's been well established for many years, and so you know, people hear and know about us.
Is there a ceiling on the amount of interest that we charge to these people? You're looking at a lot of different groups.
Yes, we are. And Hoico Credit takes on all the currency risk. All the money is loaned to people and paid back in local currency. And so if that the value of that currency fluctuates, Hoico Credit takes on all of that risk. And the actual interest that's charged to clients, end clients, really depends on the circumstances in that country. So it could be, you know, 6% in some places. It could be 12% in some places. But that's compared to if they had to go to a loan shark, which might be their only option if they have any options at all, it would be 25% per month, never mind per year, you know. So there's a lot of factors that help to keep it sustainable and doable for people. So it varies widely. There is no actual ceiling on how much is charged, because in very volatile places, the interest can be quite high. But it's done in a way that's sustainable and that makes sense for both the end clients and for Hoico Credit.
Do you have any idea of the impact on their children as far as education goes?
Yeah, the education of their children, the nutrition levels, both of the clients and of the surrounding community, are some of the things, that's some of the data, that's some of the numbers that get collected when they're studying, their progress out of poverty. Yeah, I can't quote you specific numbers depending on certain countries, but those are things they're always paying attention to. So it's not just about did we get our money back, it's what good did that money do? Did it help people with their education, with their lives? Yeah.
Could you tell us, is there any project that has happened here where it really surprised you what it was that people needed to borrow money for?
Well, you know what? Before I went to Bulgaria, when I first got involved with Hoico Credit, I thought, you know, this was all about small loans, right? That's kind of what you hear about microcredit. And so one of the things that surprised me when we visited that big agricultural cooperative, they're getting loans in the millions of dollars. So they work with small and larger organizations and loans, but the point is, how does it benefit the people in that community? And so that was one of the big surprises for me, was that it's not just just little loans. But when I started to see the social impact that like these cooperatives have in the countryside in Bulgaria, it's phenomenal, because they really, those cooperatives that we visited have become the social safety net for those communities. And it's loans from Oikocredit that have made that possible. You know, people are being more healthy. They're getting enough food. They're surviving and even starting to thrive. And many of them are elderly folks who would have been awfully destitute without the formation of those cooperatives and then the help that that provides them. So that was one of the most exciting things. And, you know, the Mitev family that I introduced you at the beginning was really exciting, because, of course, Roma people, as you probably know, are within Bulgarian society, as in other places in Europe, are some of the poorest and most marginalized. In lots of ways, they're like the Aboriginal people here in Canada. And to see a family like that, that was really, has really lifted itself out of poverty with what is really very simple, access to credit, something that we all take for granted so easily, month by month. You know, we put money, you know, stuff on our credit cards, whatever. But access to good business loans and a little bit of help did amazing things for that family and for their whole community.
What was the best food you ate while you were on your trip?
Well, the best food. We traveled near the Black Sea, not too far from Sochi, really, kind of across the Black Sea. So we were near, you know, we were near a lot of fishing communities, and so we had a lot of really good seafood. The fish was great. And having grown up in Japan, I love fish. So we had some good fish in Bulgaria. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Well, I have a question. In particular, I guess I'm thinking of Africa or South America. Mm. The governments ever struggle with outsiders coming in, giving money, despite the fact that their population is flourishing under that help? Mm-hmm. Is there ever an issue with that?
You know, I'm not aware of a lot of problem with that. No doubt there are bureaucratic issues, absolutely, with regulations and that kind of stuff. But I, that's not, you know, as a volunteer, I don't know a lot about that. But in general, when you're bringing money into a country to loan to people, you don't have as much problem with now, you know, some governments want to make sure they're getting some kind of cut out of that. But, you know, you're actually raising the tax base of the people there. So it's hard to argue with that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. By talking to church groups, Rotary clubs, we do, you know, we do a little tiny bit of advertising sometimes in places like the United Church Observer, or we do attend some social investment kind of conferences and that kind of thing. But, you know, mostly it's word of mouth. Mostly it's people talking to each other. And there are a couple people connected to this congregation that have been investors in Oikocredit for many years, actually. I don't know if she wants me to identify her, but Deneen is a big help, actually. She's making phone calls on our behalf to let people know about our annual general meeting, which you are graciously hosting on the 23rd of this month. We'll be right up there. So you're welcome to come and see a little bit more of the nitty-gritty. The meeting is actually happening in Victoria, but we're using the miracle of the interweb to simulcast it right here. Yeah.
I think as a staff, you traveled a lot of countries, right? And my question is, does Oiko Credit arrange some educational or mission trip to make a develop the face-to-face relationship between investor and workers?
Yeah, it is possible. As a member of the Western Canada board, that's how I got a chance to go. And over the course of several years, they try and get everyone who gets involved at that level to go to at least one place to see what the work is like. Because, of course, when you meet people face-to-face and really see what the work that you're involved in through Oiko Credit, it's very powerful for us, and then for us to be able to share that story with others. So yes, the next trip is to Costa Rica. That's happening this spring. And our last one last year was to Senegal. So every year Oiko Credit organizes at least one, sometimes two trips where it's not too disruptive to the staff in that country, and they get organized. And, you know, I got a chance to meet the folks in Bulgaria who work on behalf of Oiko Credit. They work for Oiko Credit International, and they were really impressive people. I mean, not only were they very fluent in English and really helped us with the translation work, but when they came into the cooperative, or when they came into the community, you could tell the warmth of the relationship between those folks and their partners. It was really heartwarming to see.
When making investment to Oiko Credit, could investors choose a project or the country where do they want to fund?
Unfortunately not. You can't. It goes into one big pot. But what I do, and what I encourage others to do, is, you know, focus on a few that you're most excited about, and imagine that your money is supporting that work. I actually, in another life, also worked for World Vision for a little while before I came back to pastoral ministry. And it's a great organization, but they spend a lot of money connecting one individual with one individual child. There's a lot of resources that go into maintaining that personal connection. And it's one way to do it. They raise a lot of money doing that. But Oiko Credit and the United Church of Canada, through Mission and Service, for example, follow a different model where we put all our money together because we want all of that money to go and directly benefit the people that we're seeking to partner with. So you don't get that personal connection, but you can kind of create it yourself. There was a question. Oh.
Yes. Do you have any projects in Canada?
No, Oiko Credit works only in developing countries and Eastern European countries. But there are other microfinance organizations that do work within our communities. It's still pretty small within Canada, but there are those organizations. It's your turn for sure.
Well, it was more or less the same question.
Okay.
If I want to invest a small amount with the Oiko, how do I go about it?
Well, I can sign you up. This is the question we always hope we get, you know? Yeah, it's a pretty because it's in Western Canada, we are a cooperative financial organization, a little bit like a credit union, but much simpler. We have cooperative shares that you can buy for anywhere from $250 up. That's our minimum investment. But you fill out a membership, you give us a check that goes through our bookkeeper. We have very part-time staff. Most of us in Oiko Credit Canada West are volunteers, but that goes through our bookkeeper, gets sent to the Netherlands, and then directly into loans. And so, yeah, we can sign you up.
You get an annual report every year.
Yep. You do get an annual report.
And
yeah, and you can choose. You can either reinvest your 2% and keep it rolling over. You can donate it. or you can receive a check for that 2% every year. Your choice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the interest rate is set?
It's set annually. So it gets declared. It's a dividend, actually. So it's a dividend that gets declared annually at the Oiko Credit International AGM in June. So, but, you know, we already know that this year, that once again, as it has been almost every year since its beginning, I think when there were some real economic issues in the world, it did drop down to like 1.5 or 1% for a couple of years. But almost every year, it's been 2%. And certainly recently, it's been very consistently at 2%. So it is. It can change, but it's been very consistently at 2%. Some great questions.
Is the next question who wants coffee?
Okay, we have time for some mingling and some more questions for Bruce, and he's got some materials outside. Maggie, I think he's got some information on how you sign up, and but there's also some more information about some of the projects, and so you can have a chat and ask questions.
Well, I have a question. Is the treasurer of your congregation among us by any chance? There we go. Oh, you were asking good questions.
Yeah. Of course she does.
Of course, that's self-serving on my part. But of course, we would be delighted if you would consider investing as individuals or as a group. And you will be in good company, for sure. Yeah.
Please help me thank Bruce, and then we'll go and break for coffee.
Thank you.